Osiris.
Hi, listeners. I want to tell you about a cause that I'm involved with at Heritage Radio Network. HRN is celebrating its 15th year, and to celebrate, we're deepening our commitment to giving voice to the next generation of food system storytellers, and we need your help. Our internship and fellowship programs help activate new possibilities for underrepresented and underestimated young people through experiential journalism, audio engineering, and production training. Through these unique programs, HRN helps food equity stewards build essential workforce readiness skills that expand their potential and foster economic mobility. Please consider supporting these critical programs. And with a minimum donation, you can be entered to win a dinner for two at an amazing restaurant in one of 8 cities and tickets to a concert at a great venue in one of those cities. We have incredible partners across the country who have donated, as they also share our passion for helping to educate the next generation of food system storytellers. Check out heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. That's heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. And make sure you donate before March 31st. Thank you.
Hey everyone, it's Cam Hurt, host of the Best Show Ever podcast, and we have got a second season coming out very soon that I am very excited about. We've got some very cool special guests, including musical acts that we all love, like Karina Reichman, Daniel Donato, Jake Brownstein from Eggy, Rick and Peter from Goose, and many more. Tune in for new episodes dropping on Osiris Media March 5th on the Best Show Ever podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Always Almost There Live. We are very, very excited to be here on this fine Wednesday afternoon, joined by very, very special guest, CT of Vampire Weekend and Taper's Choice and Hasty Ranks. CT, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, man. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for being here. We're really excited to dive into a whole slew of topics that we have here, you know, sit-ins and just, you know, the origins of the Goose and Vampire Weekend relationship. But before we get there, wanted to start with something I think is on the top of everybody's minds and on the Taper's Choice message boards. People are asking a very, very important question. They want to know if Type 3 is part of Close Encounters or is it a separate jam?
Great question. As you can tell by the naming, we're having a little fun in with the song titles there. I think of it as its own thing. I think this is, you're talking about the history of Taper's Choice, Volume 1, Taper's Choice, a record we put out last year. And yeah, I think we kind of thought of that as well as the Choice Tapes, which are a series of, I believe, 5 now cassettes. We thought of them as like longer form, like side A, side B. With the history of being a little bit more delineated and a little bit more like concrete in terms of, you know, making a record is different than a cassette in terms of where a song starts and stops. But yeah, I think of them all as kind of like ideally a well-connected suites, and some of which were done live, some of which were constructed afterwards. But yeah, I think I consider them kind of a similar thing.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Boards are a flame.
There we go. The boards are a flame. That's good.
Yeah. Awesome. So to transition us from Taper's Choice, which we're going to come back to, because I definitely want to talk about Taper's Choice a bit more, to Vampire Weekend, which we've got a bunch of Vampire Weekend stuff to talk about. Obviously, the 30-minute Cape Cod, which is like a really big deal to a lot of people in a lot of spaces, right? Not just in the Goose community. This is a big deal everywhere. So Taper's Choice, Twitter has described you, CT, as the king of the big indie drug band crossover. So we're glad to have you here. And like on the note of that crossover, just thinking about the sit-in and the things coming, you know, from that, you had a pretty crazy week leading up to that. You were in an entirely different part of the United States 1 or 2 days beforehand. Is that true?
That was...
Were you like at the Eclipse Festival in Austin?
Days. That was because night four was Wednesday, I want to say, right? Wasn't that Wednesday? It's hard for me to even remember the date.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, you know, that's like any band putting out a record, release week is kind of the most, hopefully, like the most action-packed and geographically diverse situation where you're you know, you want to let people know we have a new record out. I'd like to think that at this point in our career, we're doing that in like a sort of a classy way, and you know, that we're trying to let people know that the tunes are out. We're excited to share them and do that in ways that feel like in line with the record, in line with who we are. And in a lot of ways, yeah, like when the sit-in at the Cap came up, I mean, that just felt like such a perfect moment. I'm thinking about it mainly from a Vampire Weekend lens. I hope and think that, like, from the Goose side of things, like it was cool, and it felt like just a cool meeting of the minds, meeting of vibes, or however you want to describe it. But mm-hmm. So release week, we did the first show, and this is kind of like, cosmically by definition, but kind of worked out where our record had come out on the Friday, and then that Monday was the full eclipse, as you may have heard. Yes. And you know, we just sort of got lucky where, you know, we were able to find a venue in Austin that was outside, and Austin being, you know, such a great live music city anyways, but then having this built-in event, you know, to play under. And in some way, it was funny walking on stage at that show. It was like, normally first time we play a lot of live debuts for us, as I'm sure the Vampire Weekend boys can attest to, that, like, you know, there's a little bit more nerves coming up of like, like first show of this record. We've rehearsed for a long time. I feel great, but there's still like just sort of first time jitters. But in some way, for me personally, kind of knowing that whatever we did on stage, we were like second fiddle to an eclipse. Right. Like, it kind of like took a little bit of, it was just kind of like, oh, cool, we can just go out here and have fun. Like, there's an experience kind of built in that people are going to enjoy. And, you know, I thought we played a good, great show. But ultimately, like, you know, as part of this like much larger event, it was like kind of cool to just have it be a part of this larger thing.
Nice. Is that where you guys debuted the like the medley with like the possum and like Cumberland Blues snippets?
Yeah, that was the debut of, we're calling it Cocaine Cowboys, although it's, you can call it whatever you want, I guess. It kind of came from this idea of taking a song from Father the Bride and changing the arrangement, kind of giving it a little bit more pep, and then event like over. We rehearsed for 3 or 4 months before we played that show. Over the course of that, it just kind of kept building and building and building, and put all these different ideas. It kind of looked like when it reached like 12 to 15 minutes, and not really even a jammy song, in my opinion. There's like a lot of parts, but mm-hmm. it's not, there's like a, there's no type two possibility. You know, it's like, it is a thing that exists. But yeah, so that was the live debut of that big one, which also includes like a cornhole, you know, Price is Right style game that I think that whole thing is going to evolve, and I think is fun for us, and I hope it's fun for people that are witnessing it as well.
Sure.
So it evolves from like Paris Hilton playing cornhole to more than that.
Exactly.
Which sounds incredible. I mean,
like, wherever you go from there.
I mean, yeah, like it's. There's a lot of great sit-in potential, cornhole sit-in potential.
So you know, Goose gave us the, you know, the behind the scenes kind of documentary footage of the Cap, and there was some really good stuff in there from your all's rehearsals. But can you tell us a little bit from your perspective, kind of what that day or that afternoon looked like?
Sure. Leading up to the show? We actually did. We had filmed the Daily Show that day, and which was like a really cool performance. In my opinion, I thought it turned out really well. Of our song called Mary Boone, and that kind of wraps up at like 7-ish or something. And
oh wow!
When we saw that, like, okay, we're doing this thing in the day, but Goose is playing that night, and there was, you know, mutual, we had been trying to figure something in the live zone out, like, okay, this could work. Like, we can get in a van, get some dinner and, you know, and head up to the Cap. And so it was kind of, you know, we did the show and then got in a van and headed up and did what I just said we would do. But yeah, I think, you know, Ezra had sent Goose, had sent our record, like, you know, like a advance or a stream or whatever. And so, you know, that they, you know, it's cool. It's really cool to me to, whether it's Goose or whomever, like, anytime anyone likes your music is a blessing, quite frankly. But, you know, also like when it's a fellow musician and especially when it's, or even more so when it's someone kind of not in your specific lane, you know, like when it, sure. when someone whose approach is different and awesome in its way, but is not our approach to some things that like, that, yeah, when that still kind of connects and resonates with people, that's yeah, it's just, it's awesome. So I think that we've been talking about trying to figure something out. They'd heard the record, and then I guess it was just kind of like, yeah, well, why don't we do one song from the new record, one old one? And I think largely, wait, is there like a nickname for Goose? Like, I don't want to keep saying Goose. Do you call them the boys? Is there like a, you know, like,
no,
a fan
nickname? Boys, please, no.
We do not call them the boys.
Okay. I don't know. I was just checking. Okay. So I think Goose had rehearsed Gen X Cops on their own and, like, you know, got the album version down. And I think that, I don't know exactly how the Cape Cod one, like, why that was chosen, although probably because there's a longstanding, not joke, but like a theme of his internet radio show Time Crisis, of like doing an 8-minute Cape Cod was sort of like a fan meme or something, that I think maybe, and I don't know this specifically, but I have a hunch, this is pure conjecture from like, honestly, like a, almost like a fan's perspective, but I have a hunch that Goose was kind of like, all right, 8-minute Cape Cod, we'll see about that. Like, I don't, like, it wasn't stated that, like, we're going to hit half an hour.
Yeah.
But I kind of, I don't know, some part of me, I got the sense that, like, not that they were fucking with us, but I got like, all right, like, you're on our trip, like, let's do it. Let's really do it. In a way that, like, I found very cool and, like, and fun and, like, I thought was awesome to, that's the whole point of live music and jam bands and everything is, like, that's only going to happen that once. Mm-hmm. Like in that way, I don't know what might happen in the future, but and sort of this unplanned, like the phrase Rick used was like, all right, so maybe this one will go into the woods a little bit, and we were talking about like what's the signal to like sort of get back to the composed like ending, yeah. So just out of that phrase and kind of like, I don't know this, but I kind of feel like they were like testing us a little bit. Like, all right, let's do this.
Well, it's funny because you're not the first sit-in of like a jam curious band who kind of, they just like go off the deep end with. Like they had Taylor and Griffin from Dawes sit in with them in September, and they did a 27-minute Rosewood Heart. And Peter did the same thing that, like, you know, when you guys left the stage, and he was like, those guys can hang out or whatever, you know, like. He did that after the Dawes sit-in last fall too. So it's funny seeing how, you know, you get like, you know, because obviously, you know, you guys have talked a lot about how at least you and Ezra are like jam fans, and you know, obviously you are. But it's cool to see then you like get on stage with a band like Goose and then get the opportunity to take one of your songs out for 30 minutes. And since we're going reverse chronological order here, but that's fine. You didn't have an opportunity to play with Cotter before, correct? Like it was just, you went on stage and that was playing.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, I think kind of what Goose put out in the footage, a document, I don't know what they would call it, of that night. That was the extent of the group rehearsal, was the Cotter and myself like drumming on our thighs and some acoustics around the room. And you know, because the Gen X Cops ones, it was kind of like, we're going to stick with the kind of hit the record version. So there was like a known bit of that. And the song Cape Cod Kwasa Kwasa, you know, that song's from our first album, which came out in 2008. And speaking for myself, I could barely play drums at that point. This is part of Vampire Weekend history, but I never really played drums before Vampire Weekend. Mm-hmm. And so like a lot of the early stuff, I think it's cool because it's like they're often very weird parts because I just didn't know what I was doing, but they fit the tunes, and I'd like to think I've gotten better since then. But that Cape Cod Quas Quas is not a difficult drum part, I would say. And that one in particular is a lot. There's not like a backbeat on the snare. It's kind of open, and I think that's an easy one to fill in. And you know, we talked a little bit about, maybe you do the stare with me, like maybe I'll kind of like lean into the kick more. And we did a couple little like discussion-y things. But actually the main thing I said was, this is going to be a long anecdote, but I ended up filling in for Bill Kreutzmann at a Billy and the Kid show. Yeah. Where I was asked and honored to be asked to just come up and do like a drums portion. And like, I don't know what they had for me, but I was going to do something in the drums portion. And then when I got, it was in Santa Barbara, I live in Los Angeles. And so on the drive up, someone called me and was like, "Hey, Bill's got COVID. Could you play the whole show?" I was like, and you know, it's like, even if it wasn't physically Bill Kreutzmann, it's kind of like, okay, Bill Kreutzmann's asking me for a favor. Sure.
Just say yes.
Yeah. And so, you know, that was a crazy show. I know that most of the tunes, obviously, but never played them before. So that was like a kind of a crazy seat of the pants thing. I thought it turned out well. I haven't listened to the tape, but, you know, I think it went okay. But anyways, I was talking to Andrew Barr, who from The Slip and other things.
From The Slip, yeah.
Huge fans.
Big fans. Huge fans. Like, go way back.
Very much the same. Yeah. And he was kind of like, we were kind of having a similar conversation of no rehearsal, but like, how are we going to approach this? And he told me a bunch of things, and all of a sudden he was kind of like, and actually you should just never do it, or you should do whatever the fuck you want. Like, that's what Kreutzmann told me. So at a certain point when Cotter and I were, and I was like, maybe just kind of saying like four specific things. Then I was like, actually just do it. Yeah. Do whatever the fuck you want. Cause the whole point of this is we're figuring it out. It should be fun. It's like, you shouldn't be thinking, you know, about like, you got to hit this part or something. And I think that's what it felt like. And I think that was cool. I thought.
Yeah, it was really cool from an audience perspective, especially now knowing that you guys had never, you know, rehearsed as a full band before, because that's a lot of people on stage. And, you know, Bio and Trevor also playing bass together for 30 minutes. Like, it didn't feel as though you guys were, you know, like unfamiliar with each other's playing or like stepping on each other's toes during the jam. So that's really cool to learn that you guys had never, you know, rehearsed before.
Yeah.
I think that was Bayo's first time ever playing a five-string bass.
Ooh.
And I don't think he was like, you know, again, I don't know exactly how much he used the fifth string.
Sure.
But that was, he was kind of like in the van, I was like, oh, okay, fifth string. All right. And I could see him like kind of like thinking about how should I use it? Yeah.
Yeah. Just skip that top string. I think one of the things that struck me about that jam is how well that jam came back together at the end.
Yeah.
The return to Cape Cod Kwasa Kwasa from the jam is, I mean, it's incredibly tight. It's really, really good. And I think a lot of us were impressed by like.
That is the one thing we discussed was like, okay, like when, yeah. when the, like chord thing starts happening, we'll, you know, eyes up and we'll figure out when it happens. I do think. Probably if you listen really closely, there's a couple times when either myself or Bayo maybe thought that was happening at like maybe minute 12 or minute 19. And we maybe one or both of us kind of were heading that direction. And then I felt like Rick kind of going like, nope. Or I was like, okay, all right.
We're going further into the woods, boys.
Yeah.
That's really awesome insight because I was definitely wondering that those are the types of things that I really think about a lot is like, yeah, I wonder what did they talk about before? Like, was there an intention to go that long? So it's really cool to hear that was really a surprise to you guys while you were on stage in the middle of it, that it did kind of keep going. And yeah, it, you know, there was some really cool moments in that jam. You know, because I was kind of wondering, I was like, oh man, you know, is Ezra gonna take a ripping solo? Like, you know, I don't know. And so Ezra and Rick did some cool interplay.
That was, you know, my favorite parts is because Ezra's a great guitar player, and usually in Vampire Weekend, it's kind of, you know, it's deployed specifically. Mm-hmm. And there's a couple solos, but even those are kind of composed because of the way the recordings came about and everything. So that was fun just for personally to kind of like see them like face each other and kind of like, yeah, do that. If memory serves, you know, probably about minute 24. I haven't re-listened. I'm very confident it's Jody, but I haven't re-listened to it.
There we go. There it is.
But yeah, no, it's like, and all, yeah, it's cool to, it was cool to see like my really good friends in a musical situation that they don't often find themselves sure. in. You know, with Taper's Choice and whatever, I especially the last couple of years, like that's a muscle that I've exercised and like was pumped to be able to do. But to see Ezra and Chris like, yeah, like hiking in the woods was awesome, and I thought they did great. But yeah, kind of like seeing them like figure it out and like kind of maybe like hearing their ideas and what they were adding, that it just, as like as a fan of them as people, and you know, having played so many shows and been through so much, it was really cool to see them in that context.
So I have to ask one question, and you don't have to answer it, but you know, I it was funny at times. Bayo's pretty, you know, he's pretty lively. You know, he likes to get into it and move his body around, which is awesome. Trevor, on the other hand, you know, he'll move a little bit, but he's very stoic, and
he holds it down.
Yeah, yeah, and sometimes, you know, while I'm watching the stream, it almost appeared as though Bayo was trying to get, you know, he's facing Trevor and almost like trying to get him to, you know, I don't know, maybe work with him a little bit on his moves. And it didn't seem like Trevor was, you know, Trevor might have had his eyes closed. Who knows?
Right.
But I was just curious if Bayo's, what Bayo's reaction was to kind of where he was on stage and what he was kind of experiencing.
Well, I think you gotta get Bayo on the pod if you want to get that deep dive. But you know, I think from my personal vantage point, like, you know, because you know, the second kid is like, you know, facing Cotter, mm-hmm. and it was a little bit hard. I if anything, saw like a picture or something, it was more what I saw of like what Chris's on stage journey was. I mean, yeah, Chris is like, he's a very, as you said, like very active dude. And you know, funnily, just this past weekend, Vampire played Jazz Fest, and Chris got sick really suddenly. He's okay, but like he couldn't make the show. So weirdly, I played bass for the first time for a weekend on Saturday, and mm-hmm. You know, I like not on the whole show, but like seven songs or something. And you know, I played the parts fine, but I was thinking like, respect. I could not do those moves and like do like that. That's like a whole another level of sure. performance, like what he has grown to be. But no, I mean, I think, yeah, I feel like Chris, like all of us, we're kind of, you know, like trying to figure out where we fit and how we would approach performing Vampire Weekend stuff and where that translates. Chris is just a mover. He's an up guy. I don't think he would be giving Trevor notes or something. He was just kind of doing his thing, doing what he does.
No, he looked like he was having a great time. It was it was really awesome to see.
Awesome. Well, let's you know, we've talked about the Cape Cod. I'm sure we'll return to it before the end of this episode. But want to get a little more background on kind of the origins of the relationship between Goose and Vampire Weekend, because you know, this isn't the first time you guys have collaborated. And I remember as far back as 2020, at least Ezra saw them in LA opening for Pigeons. Not sure mm-hmm. if you were there or what your first Goose show was, but curious, you know, how they first flew onto your radar.
Nice. Flew. Thank you. The yeah, no, I think in Ezra brought it into Vampire Weekend universe. And I think I talked to him a little bit, and he, so I had the story straight. But I think the critic Stephen Hayden is the one who brought them onto Ezra's radar. And, you know, I think like at that moment for leading into Father of the Bride and kind of just like that, not an era, but like that, yeah, that sort of moment for us, you know, I think I've always been, you know, I've always been a jammer. I saw, you know, my first Fish show was in 2000, like that's kind of who I am in a lot of ways. So like I've always been very conversant in it. Although if I'm being honest, like my nose isn't on the, it is more now, but a couple years ago, it wasn't sort of like paying attention to like who's coming up and that sort of thing. But Ezra, I think as he kind of like opened that door and like kind of was like, oh, whoa, this world is like awesome and interesting and was thinking about it. I think, yeah, just Goose came up through Stephen Hayden, saw him at the, I believe that show was at the Troubadour, I want to say.
Yes.
And yeah, he told me about it. I was like, yeah, these guys are sick. And if I'm also not mistaken, that was like kind of close to COVID times.
Yeah, like a month before, I think.
Yeah. So sort of my real introduction was like when the 2021 thing happened. And that, you know, like the ask was, can you make a 20-minute, 21-second version of this song? And they did it and did it super well and watched the whole video. Yeah. I was like, not only like the tune was cool, obviously like they have great voices and the harmonies are awesome. But like I could tell that the whole world was cool and well thought out and very like they were themselves. And you know, I'm sure there are, you know, years of building up to that and growing confidence and the people in place to do the video to, you know, but whatever, to have that house, the lighting, the mini rigs of smoke and light, you know, like the way I was like, damn, this is awesome. And I could tell that like, oh, these guys are like the, you know, I don't know, like who gives a fuck what I think, but I was like, oh, these guys are the real deal. Right. In a way, like you could tell, like I could tell, or my impression was like from very early on when I watched that, it was like, oh, I get it. And so I've seen a couple shows. Like I saw, they played the Greek in LA, and I was at one of the Wiltern ones. I think there was multiple, or maybe it was just one. So I was at that. And then obviously set one of Night 4 at the Cap. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's nothing I can say that I'm sure you guys haven't about Goose, is that they're super nice guys. That's a little bit immaterial if you like the band or not, but it's also true.
It's important.
Yeah, yeah. And like, you know, I just think that they consistently make really smart, cool decisions. Like, what, I don't know what the fuck that was, but whatever they did at a high school recently, that's awesome. To be a band their size, you can do whatever you want. Or not, you know, you largely have choices. You can make choices as opposed to like, well, what can we do? It's like, what do we want to do? Mm-hmm. And to do something like that, I think is like, that's the coolest thing to do, is you're like, you're building your world, you're doing these offbeat things, but you're taking it seriously. You're putting effort into things that aren't like career building or whatever in the classic ways. They just seem like so smart. They're building something really special. It was very cool to be whatever small part, whatever just like moment to share with them.
Awesome.
That's great. I wanted to ask you just something kind of drum specific. And so you alluded to, you know, the fact that, you know, you weren't originally intending to play drums in Vampire Weekend. And so I think a lot of times you ask me about their influences. It's like, oh, you know, I started playing drums when I was 8 and I was influenced by all these people. And then by the time, you know, they become professional musicians, you know, they have their style down and they've been influenced and all of this. So for you, I guess kind of two parts to this, like who were your influences, right? And did your drummer influences kind of develop after you already started playing in Vampire Weekend? And as the years passed and you got, you know, more, you know, hours and shows and years under your belt, how do you reconcile then? Because you mentioned, like, you referred back to, oh, how you played Cape Cod originally or whatever. Well, so do those songs evolve as you play them live over the years? And is your style kind of solidified and progressed?
Yeah, it's funny. I feel like, my drum origins are in high school jazz band where I played either bass or trombone. Like during breaks, like me and a friend would just mess around and play Chameleon, you know, like I would play the drum part from Chameleon very poorly.
Great choice.
So Harvey Mason Jr., you know, that's Harvey Mason rather. You know, he's my big influence. But you know, like I always felt like drawn to drums and rhythm, and I always like loved it. But really, like we had two rehearsals, like meeting up in a room with Vampire Weekend, where I was the guitarist, and my guitar influences are pretty much begin and end with Trey Anastasio, of course. I had the Tube Screamers and the Ross Compressor, the whole bit. But yeah, I think in a lot of ways, I maybe said this in a shorter version earlier, I think not knowing what I was doing was probably awesome for me and for us, because like whatever I was coming up with was like really just like for the song, and I didn't have things I could fall back on because I didn't know anything. And I think the trick, or the kind of the hard thing to balance as I've gotten better and, you know, taken lessons to try to backfill like fundamental stuff, is to both expand like technically what I can do, but try to not lose that weird like unthinking instinct or something, of like to still try to like not be too drummery, like to be able to do drummery things if I need to, or that's what's called for, and just to be able to do things like technically and well, but to try to like still ideally like the nugget of ideas or drum parts to kind of be just like serving the tune or as musical as possible. Not that drum stuff isn't musical, but I think of it almost like melodically or and it's funny actually, when I've taken lessons the last couple of years with this guy, a great jazz drummer in LA named Dan Schnell, he teaches lessons like in his garage, and usually if I see another student coming in before me or after me or something, you know, it's like a 13-year-old kid, which is like, okay, this is exactly where I need to be, because I did not practice my rudiments when I had, you know, when I should have, had I known. But in terms of drum influences, like I can't play like them, but like the shit I love is like, you know, Tony Williams, Elvin Jones, like these are not super deep cuts necessarily. Billy Martin, you know, MMW is like massive. And I think where I like to be, and or where like what really excites me is stuff that's like on the edge of out or like free, but has some sort of grounding in a groove. So like there's like a tension release even in the drums of non-rhythmic things, but sort of always coming back to a home base and always having a wah a little bit. That always has felt like the most exciting stuff to me. And obviously, well, it goes without saying Fishman, but I can't do anything he can do.
But who can? Yeah.
So like coming back like full circle now, so like we kind of started with the Taper's Choice, but like I do want to talk about Taper's Choice a little bit before we let you go. So I mean, you're touring with a record now for Vampire Weekend. I think last year you did somewhat of a tour. You got out to like Providence. You were in Boston for a minute.
It wasn't a month, but it wasn't, you know, we were in a van. It was like a week and a half, like yeah. New York, deep coast. Yeah.
So it like is Taper's Choice touring again, like sometime soon in like, you know, in the far out, or.
I mean, yeah, I think definitely. I think it's the scarcity, the resource scarcity right now is just time. I've got two young kids and touring a lot with Vampire and stuff, but Alex Bleeker is real estate, just put out a record, a great record, and they're touring a lot too.
Great record.
Yep. you know, Dave has, you know, like has dark side, and he's always doing all kinds of shit. is always awesome, but I don't, you know, it's like he's in worlds that I only know so much about, but he's incredible. And Zach too, like Zach is touring with people. He was just in Mexico with the Scott McNicken band, who's from Dr. Dog, but he put out a record that Zach was a part of. And yeah, so it's Taper's Choice is a real ongoing thing. We're mm-hmm. I would say that we're maybe this year where time is tough and schedule windows aligning is tough. We're working on stuff when we some windows where we can't travel, but we're working on studio stuff or of ways to like to keep going, keep growing, to yeah, just keep doing it. And in a lot of ways, I think like the initial idea was like let's start a jam band. We all love jam bands. I think not in this room, obviously, but there's some sort of cultural stigma, which I think is bullshit. Like jam is the fucking coolest. You know, whoever says differently that's kind of more their problem than mine. And I think there was something that was kind of like a cool idea of like unapologetically, this is what we are. We are a jam band. And that's a cool idea. But when we got together and started playing, that doesn't mean it would click or that doesn't mean it would be like good or something.
Sure.
But yeah, something, and it's hard to say it because I'm part of it, I know, but yeah, like even in like trying to like bird's eye view brand, it's like I could feel from the first time that Dave and I played together first and then Alex came down from San Francisco, we played, then Zach came in, like, oh, this is actually good, which is in some ways like, fuck yeah, in other ways like, oh no, I got to start another band because we can't, this is too good. And I feel like we could all sense like there's a universe here that is feels really okay. Oh, the chat just came in. The Zach Side Rage Side, of course, we got some heads. But yeah, I love Taper's Choice and it's not a joke. I mean, there's a lot of humor, I think, in how we present ourselves.
You guys are good at that.
When I'm a fan of stuff, like I like that. So, you know, I think that's what that makes it just like, it's fun to be a fan of a band. Like that's what it should be like a fun experience, ideally. But yeah, we're definitely, it's a little bit hard just calendar wise this year. But there's definitely stuff, we're talking about stuff. You know, there maybe are a few things later in the year that aren't announced yet that we do have. And yeah, I think for all of us, it's just like we love doing it. And I think it is like a real band that we, even if it doesn't look like it or like there's nothing to present at points, like we're pursuing it, we're writing, we're talking, like, you know, it's definitely, it's a real thing. And even at whatever level we are now, like, again, like being in Vampire Weekend and having this kind of insane experience of being 23 and stuff happening. And I don't think we skipped steps, but a lot of steps maybe went quickly for us. So like now turning 40 and like just starting my jam band is amazing. I fucking love it. And yeah, yeah. So sorry, a long-winded answer. I tend to give long-winded answers, but, no, yeah.
So do we.
We're. I think the idea is that it will always be there, and we're always going to want to do it whenever we can, and even awesome. When we're not, it shows like we're still working on stuff and fun stuff, and yeah.
And you guys currently have one show in the calendar, correct?
A big summer tour coming up. Big, you know, this might be a very easy way to do the whole tour. You just gotta come to one show.
Very excited. Where and when is the show? How can people?
It's in Berkeley, California. Vampire Weekend is doing some fun things where we're doing like Sunday matinee shows. Ooh. So Vampire Weekend's playing the Berkeley Greek like in the after, I don't know exactly when it starts, but it's in the afternoon. And that's actually one of the shows, which sort of, I have to pinch myself, but Mike Gordon is opening for us for a little bit of a run. And that's one of them. And yeah, so we just kind of like Bleeker lives in the Bay, and I'll be there with so half the band's taken care of, that we're going to play like that night. I believe it's walkable, or if not, a very short Uber ride. But yeah, so we're playing Berkeley. I want to say June 16th, but you can Google it. I don't exactly know if that's right. It's a Sunday night in the middle of June. It's somewhere around there.
Excellent.
Yeah. So like I brought it up, like the whole idea. I missed you guys in Boston when you were here. You played at a record store in JP. That's about 7 minutes from my house. And I only miss it because I didn't know about it. But Ryan and I had a chance to catch Taper's Choice at Peach.
Yeah.
And it was awesome.
I was surprised that we got 90 minutes in the middle of the day, but it was like, that's fun as fuck. I mean, yeah, it's in a way it was like, we kind of saw the nine. I was like, all right, fuck yeah. And yeah, I mean that, like, cause I know that festival like has the Allman Brother roots and stuff. And yeah, like, I don't know how else to say this. It's for someone who's, career has largely been not in this world. Like, I fucking love this world and all of these things, like, you know, I interface with and I know what it is. I know how special it is. And you know, the only thing that I just don't want people to think like I'm a carpetbagger or something, although, you know, playing at like a 200 cap bar is not really like a cash in necessarily, yeah. But yeah, you know, it's like, every time I get to play with Taper's Choice, it's like a blessing. It's really something that, I really love doing, and I'm it's such a blessing. Yeah, for people to like to be into it at a small level, but like, you know, you can tell that people are reacting to it, and yeah, I really hope we keep doing it for a long time.
Yeah, like you had mentioned that you had skipped some steps with Vampire Weekend. I mean, I think you went from being like a guy.
Yeah. I think maybe some of them went quickly.
Accelerated.
Some of them went very quickly. Right. So I think I've like heard you talk before. You played like a barn here in Massachusetts just like a year ago. And you were saying like, mm-hmm. this isn't a thing that like I really had much of a chance to do. But like when I was younger, envisioning myself playing guitar in a jam band, this is kind of like what I was expecting. And like, I get a chance to kind of go back and do a couple of these things that are like pretty neat.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like we played Nectars and stuff like, which goes without saying. But even, yeah, like going to Philly and like, you know, again, it's also like, it's funny because we don't have anything on Spotify. We as someone asked in the chat, like, I think Nugs is very likely, but I'm not good at the back end stuff. I feel like we're trying to or something. I don't exactly know what, but I think that's the goal, is to kind of get to these points, but to be able to tour at whatever level with only stuff on archive or re-listen, these kind of like weird collagey tapes we've made. It just feels like how we're trying to build it or to bring people in, to me feels really honest and kind of the only way to do it sustainably is like, you know, because like, oh, guy from Vampire Weekend, guy from Real Estate, like we should go in at like this, you know, that's not what we should be playing at small bars in New England for not a lot of people.
Please
play good shows, make tapes, like that's what I want to do. And that feels like kind of the way like an honest way to do it, I think. I also think it's really good. My perspective is very specific, but and I feel like we have a different sound, I think, than a lot of, like, we kind of slot in nicely in ways where, like, you know, we can go peaky, but we can go textural. You know, there's a lot of things that I feel like we're good at that I find exciting, and that's kind of my only judgment metric or something, that like, as a fan of this music, like, oh, if it feels exciting to me, hopefully that's true for other people too.
Cool. Amazing. So, just before we wrap up, I don't know if you know this, but the AAT pod, one of the things we're known for is our sports talk. And and great. So
I mean, jam in a sport, that's kind of my whole deal. So please.
Yeah. So in the extensive research that I did for this episode, I learned that you are a Tottenham Hotspur fan. Mm-hmm. And so Daniel, who one of our other co-hosts who couldn't be here today, Daniel and I are both huge Premier League fans. He's the red side. He's the red side of Manchester. I'm the blue side. But I just wanted to ask you, so how long have you been a Spurs fan? How did that come about?
Well, I spent some time in Ireland. I did like a semester abroad in Ireland, which is sort of where I discovered this is before everything was on TV over here, you know? So that's where I discovered like Champions League. And that was the year, like the Liverpool comeback in Istanbul, like in the Champions League final. And really, it's not a good story, but Tottenham was like, I'm from New Jersey, like all the greats. And, you know, so like kind of like I'm used to little brother sports. Like I'm a big Nets fan in basketball. And like, so it felt weird for me to just like, oh, I'm going to root for a top team, or like I'm going to root for the team that's like going to win. My teams generally don't win. So anyways, like Tottenham was a cool, young, exciting team. And it just so happened that their sponsor at the time was Thompson, only with an H. My Thompson is no H, no P. So that was enough to be like, oh, cool, I'll root for them. And then as it turned out, like when Vampire Weekend got signed, our label is based in London. And like the guy we worked with in England, he was a Spurs fan. So like, you know, I went to White Hart Lane a bunch and haven't been to the new one. I haven't been over, but no, I mean, it's not like in my blood, like when I was a kid, but I do, you know, I do root for the Spurs, and it was a bad weekend last weekend. So not a good moment at this particular day, but you know.
Yeah. They're great. So you came in, it sounds like you came in probably shortly before like the Clint Dempsey era, which was.
Or like Berbatov, Modric, those guys, and like the young Bale.
Yeah. That they were a fun team to watch. When they had those guys. I was going to ask if you'd been to the new stadium. That looks amazing.
This is why people are watching. This is why people are tuned into this podcast.
I love Ryan on Sports Talk. It's the best thing ever.
Jam and sports have a lot of crossover. I have not been to the new Hotspur Stadium, although I did go to Anfield and I like when we were touring Father the Bride, and I saw Man City Liverpool, which was an amazing atmosphere. I believe Man City won, but I don't really remember.
not surprising. Hey, while we're talking sports, CT, what's your opinion on pickleball?
I'm curious. Well, I guess there's a long-standing conversation, or people have some shows inside. To me, it's value neutral. I've played it. It seems it's like cool. It doesn't move me in a way that other sports do. But at the same time, I just turned 40. You know, I got to watch the knees and the ankles and whatnot. So I can see maybe growing into that. Sort of a recusal, no neutral.
It's a professional answer.
That's a very professional answer.
Yeah.
Jeff Goose is a resident pickleball aficionado. So just shifting the conversation back to the jam of the year for a second.
That's the only reason, you know, this is like some dark arts press shit. The only reason I'm here is because you guaranteed me Jody.
Yeah. So, I mean, well, there's bad news.
We're supposed to say that.
So the Jody is purely fan voted. So we have no influence on how it votes.
Formula dictates.
I know there's some backroom deals.
Yeah. There are.
The formula
dictates,
and we move on. That's
people do get very upset about it. There's threats of, you know, revolts. There's talk of collusion. This kind of thing happens every year.
And you should know, sorry, Neil, but Chris, you should know there are some people out there that are very, very against sit-ins as
qualifying for Jody.
Yeah. Well, it will. We think that they should be.
We believe that the, we believe they belong.
Competition. Yeah. Like, I mean, if it's a jam of the year is sort of the only criteria, right? If it's a Goose show, then it's a, it's like a, if you don't want to vote for it, that's fine. But I feel like trying to disqualify it from the bracket seems.
I think this is born out of the fact that, like, you know, there are dozens of jams with Trey that people were like, well, gee, if, like, you know, if it's Trey, then it automatically wins, which didn't turn out to be the case last year. But
yeah, and it's really like one guy. It's really just one guy who feels strongly about it.
Yeah. I mean, so, you know, in the event that the 30-minute Cape Cod wins, we'd love to have you back so we can, you know, give you the victory lap. We really want you to have that. So
maybe that's like end of the year, right? Or end of the calendar.
Oh, yeah. It'll be like next year.
The bracket is January next year. So we'll make sure to loop you back in when it's up for voting and you can mobilize Vampire Weekend.
I'll re-listen a year from now and campaign and make my case. I think that's gonna be tough though. It's tough to like to maintain momentum if the jam happens in April. There's so many shows to go.
You get it, you know.
Yeah, you understand.
There's bias. It's tough.
Ryan did drop the hint, though. You can mobilize the fan base. It has been done by musicians before. It has affected the results. I think you draw from a much larger fan base than any of us have dealt with before. Yeah. So who the hell knows? I mean, that could really do something.
We're going to need to beef up the back end security for next year.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, CT, for joining us today. It's been an absolute pleasure getting to talk to you about all of these amazing topics, especially sports. Because that's our favorite thing on this podcast. We really appreciate it. Yeah. We look forward to having you back to campaign in 2025. And everybody, thank you so much for tuning into this episode of Always Almost There Live. Have a fantastic rest of your day, and we will see you next time.
Hi, this is Henry Kay, host of the number one music history podcast, Rootsland. Come with me on a journey to Kingston, Jamaica, where we explore the world of reggae music and the untold stories of some of the genre's greatest legends. From the ghettos and tenement yards where the music was born to the island's iconic recording studios. We are so excited to team up with Osiris Media, the leading storyteller in music, because as you'll hear, sometimes the story is the best song.
Hello, and welcome to Novel Conversations, a podcast about the world's greatest stories. I'm your host, Frank Lavallo, and for each episode of Novel Conversations, I talk to two readers about one book. And together, we summarize the story for you. We introduce you to the characters, we tell you what happens to them, and we read from the book along the way. So if you love hearing a good story, you're in the right place. Our 9th season is coming this fall. Tune in to hear from some of the all-time great authors, Charles Dickens, Jules Verne, F. Scott Fitzgerald, and more. Subscribe to Novel Conversations wherever you listen to podcasts.